I'm calling the meeting of the Special Committee on Energy for the House to order. Today is Tuesday, March 26, 2024, and the time is 10:15. We're joined by Representative Armstrong, Representative McKay, Representative Prox. Representative Wright. I know Representative Prox is here, and I'm sure there will be others in just a little bit. So today, we're going to go and have a presentation. There was an article yesterday in the Frontiersman by Tim Bradner, and it basically talked about the NSTAR CEO. His name is John Sims, and it was his comments. I'm not always sure I put stock in everything that you read in the paper, so we're going to give him a chance to at least testify to maybe what he said is true. He has a slide deck he's going to go through. John, I know you're on Zoom. I could see you. We may lose a lot of people in this room for floor session, but my intention is to keep going until your presentation is finished. Some may come and go because they may order, they may vote on the floor, but either way, I believe that I'd like to keep your presentation moving, and I will be here unless I'm called away, and if I am, it won't be for more than 5 or 10 minutes. Okay? Okay. So, John, if you would, please put your name, your affiliation on record, and please begin your presentation.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My name is John Sims. For the record, I'm the president of NSTAR Natural Gas Company and of CINGSA, which is Cook Inlet Natural Gas Storage, Alaska, down in Kenai. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I think one of the most important parts of this presentation is actually the opportunity at the end for Q&A. So I'm going to zip through some of these slides rather quickly, and feel free, as usual, to stop me at any time if there are specific questions on those slides. But I want to zip through these so we can get to the Q&A section, which I believe will be the most important piece of this presentation and this time we have here today. So if you could please go to the next slide. I think it's really important to start off by, ensuring that folks understand the perspective that we bring when the utilities talk about natural gas supply and serving our customers. We have a duty to serve that is not shared by anyone else in this state, quite honestly. We are granted a certificate to serve the regions that we do. And with that comes a duty that we hold very dear to our hearts. And it's really what all of our missions and our basis for operating is. And so we take that very seriously. It is not shared by IPPs. It is not shared by the producers. Ultimately, the buck stops here with NSTAR and the other utilities along the rail belt. I just want to make sure folks understand that, because when we evaluate projects, we're evaluating projects that we believe are real so that we can ultimately serve our customers. We don't take time to analyze, not to be rude or offend anyone, but sort of pie in the sky ideas. We have to take things that actually have a chance of making it to the market so that we can procure that energy and ultimately serve our customers. So a very important component there that I want to make sure everybody understands. Next slide, please. So you may have seen this slide in different presentations. I think it's quite honestly one of the most important slides that we talk about. What you'll see here is, first off, the total demand for the rail belt utilities. And you can see that it extends out quite a ways out into the future. But it's important from a long-term planning perspective. And it's really what the utility's first initiative was after we got word from Hillcorp that they would no longer be able to serve or serve at the same levels that they have in the past for the railboat utilities. And so what you'll see is there are three lines going across the top there. The top line represents the highest demand scenario, and that's usually one of those cold years. And you'll see, similar to this year, that would be one of those high demand years. You've got the line in the middle that represents kind of an average year. And then the line on the bottom represents lower demand, warmer temperatures, and also factors in the mission statements and the forecasts for the electric utilities from the renewables front. So that all of that is contemplated with those demand lines that we have up on the top. Now on the lower left-hand side, you'll see a variety of different colors that represent the contracts that the railbelt utilities have with the producers and when they fall off. So you'll see the smallest one there on the bottom represents Homer Electric. That one concludes with Hillcorp in just a couple days. You've got Chugach Electric, you have MEA, and then you have NSTAR, which is in the blue that extends out to 2033. Now, this is where it starts to get really important and kind of the aha moment that all of the utilities in collaboration with DNR came to. The green represents gas that we expect can come from Cook Inlet. So there's some sort of line of sight in there that includes the Fury, the Bluecrest, and additional reserves that we believe Hillcorp has behind pipe. So factor in all those things like higher cost, successful production, all of those things represent what we believe we can get out of Cook Inlet in the green. What the real discussion has been up to this point and why there's such a sense of urgency amongst the utilities is the red. That represents gas. There's no line of sight in the local market here in Cook Inlet, and that gas has to come from some other place, whether it's the North Slope or imported from another part of the world, to meet the utility demand. And so that's really the part of gas that we're talking about and the concern, really, from a utility perspective on what we're looking at. Now, this was collaborated and gathered back in 2022. The fall of 2022, and so there's some obvious things to note. There was some green section there in the top in 2023. Obviously, that gas was met. And in 2024, that largely represents Homer Electric. Now, Homer Electric came to NSTAR, and they requested formally to become a gas sales customer. So what does that mean? Well, that means that as opposed to procuring their own gas on the market, they came to NSTAR and said, hey, we want to be included in your total gas portfolio and total demand. So we now have to go out to the market and find gas for Homer Electric along with the rest of our gas sales customers. And we were able to do that recently, and the commission actually just approved a contract that we have now with Hillcorp. This is not a new contract. This is an amendment to the existing contract, and that's really important because, you know, we've heard a lot about, well, I'm sure it's just an increase of cost that's required to get these producers to, you know, go out there and develop. That's not the case. So if you go to the next slide, this shows the cost of additional supplies in Cook Inlet. And that highlighted language is really important. So in total, we got about 3.5 BCF of gas under contract with Hillcorp for Homer Electric's needs in 2024. It's a one-year extension. But you can see there, you have one BCF designated between that 2024-2025, one BCF in 2025-2026, and then 1.5 BCF going out there in 2027, totaling 3.5 BCF. So that is a new amendment to the contract that's our special cover provision. And basically what that means is in order to get gas for Hillcorp, we had to eliminate those volumes of gas from a cover provision in our existing contract. Cover provisions are really important because that's what makes our gas firm. Meaning, hey, producer, we have agreed upon a set amount of gas coming in. If you don't deliver that gas, then you have financial ramifications for not being able to deliver that gas for us. This special cover provision eliminates that for the 3.5 BCF. So what it's done is it's essentially turned that 3.5 BCF of gas future years into interruptible. So from our perspective, that's challenging. It's a definite trend that you can see the market wants to go to. And that's why we're really evaluating the LNG import option where we can get gas under firm contracts that we can count on and rely on. Now, if you go to the next slide, it's sort of a high-level discussion of go ahead and hop to the next slide, please. Thank you. So this is kind of a very high-level overview of contracts. And so you've got all requirements, full requirements, contracts. We haven't seen one of those since the early 2000s. Currently, Matanuska Electric has what probably will be the last full requirements contract you'll see out of the Cook Inlet. That expires in 2028 for Matanuska Electric. You have firm contracts where you can see that it pretty much meets everything except all of your deliverability requirements. And then you get into the interruptible and the spot market. Now, back probably about 10 years ago when we had similar challenges of contracting for gas in the Cook Inlet, we tried the spot market route. This was back in the days of Marathon and Conoco. And to be quite honest, it didn't work. It was worth a shot. But during times of high demand, what we saw were prices upwards of $20, $22, $23 per MCF to acquire gas in that spot market. So it was a good attempt. Ultimately, it didn't work, and we probably won't be heading back to that place. The trend that we're seeing now is producers, and I've mentioned this before in earlier testimony, producers are interested in interruptible contracts. Basically, what that means is if I have the gas, I'll sell it to you if I want to. So there's nothing that obligates them to sell that gas to the utilities, and that's a bad place. Again, going back to our duty to serve, if we want to make sure that we have reliable amounts of gas to meet the demand here in South Central. Next slide, please. So this brings us to kind of our phase two efforts. As I mentioned, back in 2022 when the producers, when Hillcorp made the announcement that they didn't have line of sight on future gas supplies and at this time were unable to extend existing contracts, we got all the utilities together. We created a working group. We went through sort of a phase one initiative, which was let's identify the top projects based on reliability, based on price, and based on when we think we can bring those to the market. We came and kind of let the dust settle, and we selected basically four potential projects that we've been working on in this phase two effort. You can see the group of experts and fantastic companies, both a combination of Alaska and all 48 companies, who have really worldwide expertise. To date, we've spent a little bit over $3.5 million on this effort. So again, we're not just throwing simple analysis and simple forecasts onto a spreadsheet. We are spending real dollars to look at what's feasible, what's possible, what's probable, and what's likely an option to be able to serve our customers in the future. Next slide, please. The biggest sort of aha moment that we came to was, after a lot of this work, after the considerations for what's required for, DOE permits, for Corps of Engineer permits, Coast Guard, all those types of things, based on their studies, their findings, they felt like the soonest we could get a project in place was, fourth quarter 2029, first quarter 2030. If you go back, and I don't need to go back here on the slides, but if you think about that demand chart that I showed, Puget Electric, Matanuska Electric, their gas contracts with Hillcorp expire in 2028. So this is, now representing a gap. So what have we been doing since that time? Quite honestly, we've been trying to figure out how to fill that gap based on sort of expectations and when we can bring gas to market. It's going to result or require a combination of two different things. First and foremost, trying to get as much gas out of Cook Inlet as we can. And the second piece is some sort of small-scale ISO container or some other LNG solution that perhaps isn't the full-scale 70 BCF of requirements, but smaller until we can get that facility up and running. So it's, the challenge at the small scale, it's significantly more expensive, but it may be something that we have to do given the time constraints and the challenges we have on the permitting side for these projects. Next slide, please. Again, just kind of touching on some things here. We can, you guys can read that. I'll skip to the next slide. Again, one more slide. I want to be aware of your guys' time. So we've had a lot of discussions about what are possible solutions. And one of those that keeps coming up is renewables. And so I wanted to take some time to talk about renewables and how they can play an impact over the long term. And this is data that comes from Alberta. It's Green Energy Alberta. You can see the website down there. This is based on actual data from the fourth quarter of this most recent year and looks at how they produced power in that region. And you can see they've got a very diverse region with different power supplies. They have coal, they have natural gas, they have solar, they have they have biomass, and they have wind as well. And it's the wind piece that I want to touch on. And if you go to the next slide, what you can see is this is the fluctuation that you see in wind and that kind of power generation. It's highly variable. It's not dispatchable. And the best thing that they have in Alberta is the opportunity to buy off of something called the interchange. And so there is over 40, not over 4,500, but there's almost 4,500 megawatts of available wind capacity in Alberta. And you can see on that day back in January, they got 79 megawatts out of a total potential of almost 4,500. So what do you do in that scenario where the wind's not blowing, your gas power generation is maxed out, your hydro's maxed out, your coal's maxed out? What does an entity and a location do? In Alberta, go to the next slide, they buy off the interchange. And so you can see during varying times of the year, they had to bring in power from some other location outside of Alberta. And this is why I want to harp on and hit on this so much, because we don't have this option here in South Central Alaska. So what is the, you know, what do the electric utilities do in this scenario where the wind's not blowing, the sun's not shining, they've maxed out all their other different types of generation that they have available to them? They come to the utility, potentially, whose service territory they reside in. So you've got Chugach, you have MEA, and you have Homer Electric, all within our service territory, and we have an obligation to serve. So that's why I'm concerned about that. I was chatting with a board member the other day from one of the electric utilities, and they say, why do you keep bringing this up? It says no concern of NSTAR. It must be because it's going to impact your revenues. Well, transport revenue represents about 9% of our total revenue picture. So that's not the concern that I have. The concern that I have is that if they can't produce power, they're going to come to NSTAR and say, hey, you have to serve us because we're in your service territory. And if you go back and look at what's happened over the past, that's happened not on the electric side, but on the natural gas utility side, where Fairbanks Natural Gas at the time lost gas supplies from their smaller producer, and they said, NSTAR, you have to serve us. And so we scrambled to try and find gas supply for them, and I don't want that situation to happen before. So I am, you know, from a renewables perspective, I think it plays a critical role in the long-term future for Alaska, but we have to be very honest about what it can and cannot do. And it is not the end-all, be-it-all fix for the Cook Inlet natural gas situation. So that's really the only point I wanted to make with that. It's an important point for everybody to understand, and we are supportive of it. As a matter of fact, our parent company has both hydro and wind turbines in Canada, so we're very bullish on that possibility and that potential, but just need to be really honest about what it can and cannot do.
John, just a second. Can I interrupt you for a minute? We've been told that the floor session is now to the call of the chair, so those that were planning on leaving in lieu of going to the floor, don't have to right away until the chair has actually called the floor session. So I just thought I'd share that with you all. Is there any questions for John at this point? Or I actually should be saying Mr. Burns. I'm sorry. Is there any questions for Mr. Burns?
Mr. Sims.
Mr. Sims, right. Mr. Sims. So.
Are we going back to those two slides that he skipped, I hope?
If he'd like to, I don't know whether that's Mr. Sims's decision.
I am happy to if someone has a question on those two slides.
You have a question on those, Representative? Okay.
I personally think they're pretty important comments on slides 8 and 9, but if we don't have time, fine.
Mr. Sims, if you would go back to those, we'd like to hear those.
Absolutely. So I believe it's slide 8. I'm having a difficult time saying, but slide 8 there, you know, the timely actions are required to avoid a gap in supply. And really, when you look at how we're planning for natural gas supplies in the future, it's broken out into two sort of periods. The first is short term. As I mentioned, we have to have strong support for Cook Inlet exploration and production activities. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Back when the House and Senate Resource Joint Committee got together, producers were very specific about what their needs were. We should be listening to those needs. we should be addressing those needs, because ultimately that is going to be how we get over this gap in the short term. On the long term, we need to have a planning, something in the works where we can rely on, whether it's in-state or out-of-state gas. We need to, you know, make sure we're all on the same page as far as where we're heading. So I think that's critical. The bottom line is the customers are going to be on the hook for these prices. So we need to make sure that, number one, we have a reliable solution for them, that there's some redundancy in the system, and hopefully that it's at a cheaper rate than what we've potentially been seeing here. So continue to work, and there's a lot of things that need to be addressed. So we need to be coordinated in our efforts. Next slide. And through the chair, Representative McKay, you're absolutely right. This is a critical slide here. Whether you're a electric utility, natural gas utility, storage is critical and key for the future. There is no one that suggests otherwise. And as a matter of fact, when you think about the renewables and how they can reduce the overall demand in Cook Inlet, that's contingent upon significant storage in the inlet. So that is going to be a very strategic and important part for the electric utilities to ensure that they can bring those renewable resources online so that they can have dispatchable power, and ultimately storage is going to be key to that. So this is critical. SINGSA right now, which is down in Kenai, is going through an expansion. We received approval from that from the commission. We're going to be expanding that by an additional 2 BCF, and hopefully that will also bring an additional 50 to 60 million cubic feet a day of deliverability. We'll know once we drill those wells. But this is not enough. There needs to be more, and there needs to be more on both the west side of Cook Inlet and the east side of Cook Inlet. So this is something that's under our control. So we, obviously expedited that. We're in the process of doing that, and we'll keep you updated on that project. But additional storage is key, and it's going to be critical in the future.
Please continue. Please continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you could go to the economic impact slide, a lot of people are tossing around, a number of different costs per MCF. So I wanted to show what a 30% increase for one customer does. And I figured I'd grab Anchorage School District. They're one of our largest customers. In 2023, we billed them $5.9 million from MSTAR alone. Of that, $4.9 million is the cost of gas. So if you assume a 30% increase, that's an additional $1.47 million per year that the Anchorage School District will have to pay for just its MSTAR bill due to the impacts of an increased cost of gas. So these dollars that we're talking about, they're real. They have a significant impact. And this is just for one customer, and not even our largest customer. If you think about the impacts for J-Bear, for the state of Alaska, these are costs that you'll see across the board. They're significant, and they only get worse as the contracts in Cook Inlet start to be reduced in their volumes. The last slide there, we've talked a lot about market solutions, and I just want to be very clear. There is no unsubsidized energy solution that will reduce the cost of power or space heating in the next 10 years, period. It's not going to happen. Any sort of incentive or tax relief, the producers are talking about royalty relief, which I am championing. I'm in support of, as long as they're tied to fixed contracts. If they're not tied to fixed contracts if they're not tied to firm contracts, then really they're not that valuable for me. I need to have firm contracts in hand, executed, that are approved by the commission in order for me to serve my customers reliably. And then the last thing, and I've said this a number of times, the second worst thing for Alaska is to import LNG. The worst thing is to do nothing. I am, born and raised Alaskan. This decision is not an easy one. I always want to try and utilize Alaska resources when possible. But when I look at the future, because of our challenges that we have here in the state with low demand, I'm just not seeing an opportunity to take advantage of local natural gas supplies, unfortunately. So I zipped through those pretty quick. I'm happy to answer any questions, and hopefully there's some that we have from the rest of the committee. So thank you very much for the time. I apologize for not being there. I always want to be there in person because I think the flow is much better, but thank you for the opportunity to be here remotely.
Well, thank you, Mr. Sims. I appreciate it. We have Representative Armstrong has a question, if you would.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you, Mr. Sims, for being with us again. My question for you, if we can go back to slide 13, because I think sometimes in the way that this gets talked about, it's as if we're going off a cliff, whereas in 2027, we go from having, you know, all of our gas needs met to none. And so if I'm looking at slide 13, I just wanted to clarify math and even help the public kind of understand how their prices might be impacted. So when we look at a 30% increase, first my question is, and sorry, there'll be a few parts to this if that's okay, Mr. Chair, is that 30% increase, let's say that's in regards to 2030 when we have a 7 BCF roughly shortfall, I'm looking at slide 3 for that, are you saying that with a 7 BCF shortfall it's a 30% increase, or is it a 30% increase if we're importing all of the gas needs for Anchorage School District? Does that make sense? I'm trying to understand with each BCF that we're short in importing, what is the economic impact on each customer?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Armstrong, it's a great question, and it's a challenging one because you really have to look at a certain point in time. So, you know, as you can see on that second slide or the third slide where it looks at demand, most of our gas supply is met and under contract with Hillcorp, except for a section of about, you know, 4 to 5, maybe 6 BCF of gas in let's say 2025, right? And so if we take gas that's imported in and assume a $16 price per MCF, that impact on our, you know, with our existing contracts is around a 30 to 40% increase. So that those are costs that will impact folks in the very near future. And it only gets worse as you extend out and we have to bring in more and more of the high cost gas. So that cost is reflected through all of our gas sales customers, not just ASD. And that's only at one point in time, but our gas cost gets adjusted every year as the dollars increase because we're having to pick up more of our portfolio from a different source besides the existing contracts that we have. So it just gets worse as you go out. But that is in the next, I'd say, year and a half is what you're looking at, a possibility of gas cost being for all ratepayers in our service territory.
Follow up.
Go ahead, follow up.
Thank you, through the chair, Mr. Sims. That's really helpful. And I think something, I realize that what I'm asking is not super possible because of exactly what you said. Prices fluctuate. It's hard to know what other things might come online. But I do think it would be helpful to understand, like if I'm looking back at slide 3, how the red translates to dollar impacts on customers, like the difference between importing 10 BCF in 2031 versus importing, you know, 50 BCF in 2047. Obviously, we can't look that far out, but I do think that's the thing where I'm getting a lot of questions from folks of like, well, what does this mean? And is my energy bill doubling in 2030? Or is my energy bill only increasing, you know, 20% in 2030, then 30% in this year and so on? Like, there's just a lot of, I think, confusion. So anything we can do to clarify that. Again, I know I'm asking kind of an impossible question. It's so hard to know how market dynamics and things will change. But even just clarity on that, not in this moment, but in the future, would be something that I think would be really helpful for folks to understand. Thank you.
Anybody else have a question? Representative Brox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Sims. You said that the second worst thing for Alaska is to import LNG. The worst thing is to do nothing. Okay, nothing is off the table, but what are the third, fourth, and fifth worst things to do?
Through the chair, Representative Prax, I think that we have to be very clear on what solutions are and what solutions aren't. And that's why I bring up the renewable possibilities. Are renewable projects going to save the space heating challenge that we have in Cook Inlet? No, they're not going to save space heating challenges. Are they going to reduce annual demand over the long term? Yes, they are. But, here's an example. Homer Electric is, as I mentioned, anywhere from 3.5 to 4 BCF of gas they consume on an annual basis for electricity. Okay. Over that 10-day cold snap that we had back in January, where we had a lot of challenges with our wells and people were, we were really starting to rattle the cages about, reducing demand. We transported 2.2 billion cubic feet of gas over that 10-day period. So, the quantities of gas that we're talking about, we could have Homer Electric 100% on renewables, and that saves only 4 BCF of gas that we would have consumed half of in a 10-day time frame. So this is, it's important to have that perspective that, yes, they're great. They're going to save gas over the long term, but they don't fix and save the space heating and water heating challenges that we have here. There has to be a better solution and a larger solution on a greater scale to address those challenges. So I think, the second and third options, it's a pipeline from some other location, whether it's the Nanana Basin, if they find, commercial quantities of gas there, or the North Slope. It's a combination of continued Cook Inlet development that historically, and I think even today, have required incentives or some sort of royalty reliefs for the producers to incite them to spend hundreds of millions of dollars. Or it's the importation of LNG. There are very, very few options that we have. But it's also a massive opportunity, I think. When you look at option three, for example, a pipeline, there are real solutions and real potential out there to have a pipeline from the North Slope. What that's going to take is this state, the federal delegation, the governor and the legislature, and the utilities, quite honestly, all on the same page about how we can do that, what it's going to take to get that, and then execute it. And, I think there's a lot of distractions that take us away from that potential. But when you look at, that gas line project, back in the Murkowski days, was a project that was going all the way down to Chicago, right? It was a pipeline going all the way down to Chicago. And people talked about what a ridiculous, how many, thousands of miles would that have been? Well, if you go today and look at the pipeline system in Canada, the Alliance Pipeline, which goes from the northern part of Alberta and terminates in Chicago, that section of the line was built. It's over 2,000 miles, and it was built in the 2000s. The first half wasn't, because we couldn't get everything in line and coordinated. And so 1,000-mile pipelines are built frequently across the world and in Canada, who is one of the biggest champions of renewable energy. So we can do those things. We just have to be coordinated. We have to be in line. And we have to be prepared, I think, to make an investment as a state. But it's going to take everybody to do that. So we're hopeful in the long term that something like that can happen. But right now we're planning for importing LNG because the stars haven't quite aligned yet. Sorry, that was kind of a long-winded answer.
Okay, so, follow-up. Through the chair, if I understand you correctly, well, no, you didn't say, but my understanding is that a LNG import facility cannot be built before we start running short on gas supply. And I want to say 2030, but correct me if I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong entirely, not just the date.
Through the chair, Representative Prax. So the important distinction there is at scale, right? So if we want to bring in, 50-plus BCF of gas, we can't do that before 2030. So that's where I say it's going to take a combination of small scale and ISO containers, which don't have the same permitting requirements. But they're much more expensive. So it kind of depends on, whether or not you're viewing importation of LNG as a long-term solution or a short-term solution. And if it's long-term at scale, then we're not going to be able to do that until the latter part of 2029, 2030.
So Mr. Sims, let's look at the business model here for your company. Okay, you have a cylinder And a cylinder is the full amount of gas that we need to operate the state as we do today. Okay. Now, should the inlet decrease in its production of gas, say by 30%, just for the sake of the math here, and maybe it's 10%, maybe it's 5%, does it pay for you to go someplace else and buy the whole cylinder of gas from somewhere else because volume is cheaper than if you buy a quart or whatever it takes to replace that missing amount? Can you explain the business model here and how you operate in that sense?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that question. So the biggest challenge with this issue is I am trying to minimize regret cost as much as possible. And what is that? The thing that makes me the most nervous is I pull the trigger on importing 70 BCF of gas, which requires, $500 million or more. And we're now committed and locked in to long-term contracts because we have to amortize that in order to pay for it. And then in that process, there's a large find of natural gas in the Cook Inlet, right? But I'm getting close to the point where I can no longer hope for that to happen because of that duty to serve. So, and everything that I'm hearing from producers in the Cook Inlet is that they're not willing to enter into firm contracts because they don't have line of sight on the gas that would supply those contracts. So there is no doubt that it is cheaper over the long run for the consumer to import 70 BCF as opposed to 30. But if I can minimize my regret cost and have a more expensive solution for a short period of time that gets us to a large development in Cook Inlet or a natural gas pipeline coming down from the North Slope, in the long term, that will be better off for our consumers. So, I have a limited amount of time, and Chugach, in their RCA presentation yesterday that they gave that was publicly available, they said they need to pull the trigger by second quarter of this year. And, once they do that, they have committed to that path, for a long term for their organization. So we're getting in a massive time crunch. I think I said that in the House Energy Resources Committee and that joint committee, we need something to happen in the very near future in order for us to get some comfort around how we're going to supply our customers in the future, because we have that duty to serve and we can't delay this any longer in the short term.
Representative Fox has another.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, I'm just wanting to focus on the short term, just to see what can be done, can't be done. So if I understand you correctly, you're saying that bringing LNG up on ISO tankers is at least a workable option. It can be done. For the sake of discussion, let's talk about by 2030. Mm-hmm. And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yep. So that can be done, but that's expensive in the short term. And then an alternative would be to drill a bunch of more holes in Cook Inlet. But my understanding is you can't just snap your finger and a hole appears. We're going to have to get another drilling platform or two up here to accomplish that. But is that a viable alternative to, and then what would be the cost comparison?
Through the chair, Representative Prax, so for me, and this is again the challenge, I have control over one of those options that you presented. I have control and I can snap my fingers and there will be ISO containers in the Cook Inlet before 2030. That is a part of the short-term solution that can address the needs before 2030. I have zero control over drilling holes in the ground to produce more gas. Yep. And so one of those solutions is a hope, wait, and see. The other one is I can know I can execute contracts today that will have gas for my customers. And so from my perspective, I know that there's a lot of activity going on in Cook Inlet this drilling season. So my hope is that something comes to fruition and, you know, in the very near future, and by near future, I mean, you know, hopefully in a few months, producers will be willing to commit to gas to NSTAR's needs and our customers' needs. And that will, you know, delay the short-term requirement to bring in all of my needs via ISO container or small-scale LNG. And maybe I only need to bring in one ship in a year as opposed to 10. So that's the kind of discussion and you know, what we're looking at here ultimately.
Right. But follow-up, sorry?
Follow-up, Representative.
Yes, through the chair. So you would have the ability to receive that gas. Either, I guess it would have to be injected into the storage facility or something. But we have, if the ship or the isotainers showed up, we would have an ability to offload the gas in tomorrow, 6 months from now. I don't know. What is the timeline?
Through the chair, Representative Prax. So there's absolutely infrastructure that needs to be built, but we can do that in time to meet the needs of our customers. So this really isn't a question of, whether or not we'll have gas for our customers. The question is, where will that gas be sourced from and how much will it cost?
Right.
There's plenty of gas on the worldwide market, and we'll be able to put in the infrastructure required to handle that gas if it's coming from some other location besides Cook Inlet. So the biggest debate is, where is it coming from and how much ultimately is going to be the impact to our customers.
Right. Follow up?
Follow up, Representative.
And NSTAR likes that option because NSTAR has control over it. And I'm not being critical. I'm just, that's why you like that option.
I know that I can get gas. I don't have to speculate on whether or not they're going to be successful. It's available on the market.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Are there other questions for Mr. Sims? Well, I appreciate it very much. Mr. Sims, thank you very much for your presentation. We've been told over and over and over that winter is coming, and sooner or later it's going to get here. And the idea is, have we prepared enough either legislation, tax credits, ability for businesses to come and thrive while providing energy for the state of Alaska is the question. And I appreciate the fact that you were to give us the percentages, the amounts that are going to be needed sooner than later, and those that are going to be needed later than sooner. I see Representative Prox has his hand in the air again.
Yes, I was waiting for somebody else to ask a question. I didn't think it was going to end. So given the LNG import option that we were talking about, short-term isotainers or whatever, what do you need from the state to make that happen?
Well, I think, I think that's worth, through the chair, Representative Prax, I think that's an important question. So I think once the utilities sort of choose the path that they're going to head down, there are a couple things that we need to make sure are in place. One, a streamlined permitting process is going to be critical. Having the RCA, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and we have, we have done our best to try and keep them informed as much as possible so that they're hearing information in similar timeframes to when we're hearing it, because that's an important part. They have a critical role in this. So making sure that they're up to speed and comfortable with the direction that we're heading, and they've been fantastic so far to work with. I think, again, if we want to look at the possibility of subsidizing cost, it's a direct benefit to the ratepayer. You know, these projects have, high capital upfront requirements. And so that's something that we can do. We're a regulated entity, right? So everything that we do as far as grants that are received from the state, tax credits, that's all a direct benefit to the customer. And so, you know, we should consider those things as we move down the path. And again, it's a combination of short term and long term. We have time to come up and take advantage of opportunities that the state has to utilize Alaska resources. And we're championing those things because we want to keep the resources maximized in the state of Alaska. But again, the moment we import at a large scale, those opportunities are done. I think the other thing that's really important for the legislature is to look at projects that are serious in nature and that have the likelihood of success. We have, you know, discussions with folks all the time about where are you going to source your gas from? What about geothermal? You know, what about this? What about that? We need to focus on reliable projects that will be able to heat our homes. And some of these projects just aren't realistic from a permitting perspective. And one of those is, you know, where are you getting the location of the gas from? You know, Russian gas should not be an option. It should not be considered because of the the timing that will be required for the permitting process. I have reliability concerns with that. And there are other options that don't come with the same challenges. So we need to look at those things, take them seriously, and think about what's likely and what's not, and push forward those projects and quite honestly start canceling some and stop thinking about others that don't have a chance. Again, we're spending, you know, $3-4 million analyzing options, trying to do the best work we can on the best to the best benefit of our customers.
Right. Paul, I agree with you completely. Which entities do we have to have in the same room at the same time to arrive, evaluate all the possibilities, throw out those that don't work, and arrive at a decision? Which entities need to be in some room at the same time to arrive at a decision?
Through the chair, Representative Prax, I want to make sure I understand your question. When you say make a decision, what decision are you referring to? The long term, the short term? There are a lot of decisions being made that, right, that need to be contemplated.
Well, the primary one, you got to address the short term problem somehow, and then there might be some wiggle room there to start thinking about the long term. But you can't think about putting a garage on your house or a second story on your house when your house is on fire. You got to put out the fire first, then start thinking about something else. And the same thing, we got to figure out this short term problem and how do we get enough the right people in the room to get the correct information to compare one option to another and arrive at a decision. We've been dinging around with this for well over a year.
Representative Prox, this is actually going on in the building right now between the governor's office, the administration, the Senate, the producers. Everybody is involved in the discussion right now. We don't have 4,000 people in one room, no.
No.
But we do have people that are working on those specifics at this moment, and I'm not sure Mr. Sims could tell us how to do our business, but he would sure probably like to be in the room when it happens. Am I right, Mr. Sims?
Through the chair, Representative Prax, and Mr. Chair, so I think that, you know, there is a lot of work being done. There's a lot of coordination being done. The entities that need to be in the room, you know, a lot of them are communicating. I'm not sure if they're all communicating collectively, which is to your point, Representative Prax. And that's an effort that needs to take place with the governor's office, with DNR, representatives from the legislature and the federal delegation, and the producers need to be a part of that discussion, right? So there are a number of folks that need to be aligned so that this can be as efficient and as effective as possible, because ultimately efficiency is a benefit to the customers from a price perspective. So, but a lot of that work is taking place, and our mission is to maximize, again, the opportunities that this great state has for resources. So that is first priority. We're working to do that, but we are prepared to pull the trigger on an import solution if ultimately the state's resources don't come to fruition in the time we need it.
Thank you again, Mr. Sims. I appreciate your ability to join us today, and we thank you for your presentation. And now, since there is no more business before the committee, I'm going to adjourn at 11:05. Thank you again.